This is Bob Brundage, and today is, a day that lives in infamy, as a matter of fact, September 11th, 2008. And today that I'm having the pleasure of talking with Lisa Greenleaf up in Bolton, Massachusetts. And so we're here to learn a little bit more about contra dancing in New England since I left there, and a little bit more about the previous life of Lisa before square dancing. So, Lisa, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you're born and brought up?
I was born in Indiana, and I grew up in Indianapolis. Then I came out east for college, and then went back out to the Midwest to Chicago for graduate school, and then came back out to the east and have been here ever since.
Right there in Bolton?
No, I lived in Rhode Island and outside of Boston and even in Maine for a while, but I've been in Bolton for the past, about 26 years.
I see. Okay. So, how did you get, where did you first learn about square dancing?
Well, my first introduction to dancing in general was, actually, I was at a summer camp up in Vermont. It was a girls' camp, and there was also a boys' camp, and I was on staff. And they would get the two staffs together, and we would have, I now know he was a modern Western caller. Unfortunately, I don't remember his name. But he would come in and do his basic one-night stand material. And I loved it, and I did that for a few years. I mean, just this one-night stand in the summer. And then one summer, right before I was, I think my senior year in college, we had two young men on our staff who came up to me and said, "Would you like to learn how to swing the real way?"
Okay.
And they came up to a friend and me, and we did that, and I thought, oh, my gosh, I want more of that. And they told me it was contra dancing. So I discovered contra dancing, and it really took off for me when I went to grad school in Chicago because there was a young organization there that had started the traditional dancing, the contras, and what they did back then was the Southern Squares, mostly the visiting couple.
I see.
And it was always to live music, and most times it was a string band, but they also had a basic New England-style band with a piano and fiddle and a bass, and that's where I learned to do it. And back then, in the late 70s, there was an interesting thing going on because the balances, before balance and swing, the balances used to be side to side. And in Chicago, we balanced on the left foot, and then we'd kick the right foot.
Uh-huh.
The problem is, once you started to travel in New England, they balanced on the right foot first.
Right.
Unless you were from New Hampshire, apparently.
Yes.
And then I think because people traveled so much, they finally morphed it into a forward and back balance, so nobody gets kicked. But I remember that was a mark of distinction about my dancing, is that people knew I was either from New Hampshire or Chicago because I balanced on the left foot.
Okay.
And I absolutely loved it. And I also did a lot of international folk dancing and English dancing and even some Scottish dancing when I was in graduate school. And then when I moved to New England, I got into the contra dancing. And, you know, that was Ted Sinella and Tony Parks, and it was really wonderful. It was a wonderful scene.
Right. Well, did you ever get to know Ralph Page? Probably not.
No, he had already died by the time I started. I was just on the end of the Dudley Lothman Revolution.
Uh-huh.
I remember that was just about the time when a lot of bands were becoming independent from Dudley and starting up here and there, and the music was starting to spread all over the place. And that was right before the music really started to change.
Uh-huh.
Back then, the music was very rhythmic. It was slower than they play it today, for example. Not so much variation. There was improvisation, but and of course, the wonderful thing Dudley did was he introduced all these wonderful new Scotch-Irish tunes.
Yes.
And then people started to write their own tunes, and so I mean the music's always been great, but it's interesting for me to track it because I know it's changed so much over the years.
Yes.
But that's one of the things I always loved about it was live music, and that just to me was wonderful.
Right.
The other thing is, when I moved to New England, I noted that they didn't do the visiting couple squares. They didn't do the Appalachian style squares.
Right.
They did the quadrilles. And that's where Tony and Tetsunella were just wonderful.
Yes.
With that. And, you know, those are out of favor now for the most part, although I think they are really great for beginners because, and they're good for beginner callers because they're phrased.
Sure.
It's a lot easier to start off with a phrased square. But they were, back when I started, the squares were really big, and you'd get a couple of sets of them in an evening. You'd get three, maybe three sets of them in an evening. And
yes.
Now that's not quite the case.
Right.
Yeah. And I started calling in, I think, around 1984, and I was really handed a gift because I used to be a high school English teacher, so language has always been very important to me, and I do love to teach. And when I discovered this dancing, I thought, oh, I want to do this. I want to be a caller, but my friends are shocked when I say this, but I was actually a little shy back then. And even though in the Chicago area they were trying to grow new callers, I just never felt I had enough self-esteem to do it. But then when I moved to Rhode Island, I was actually on a Morris team, and I was teaching the beginners how to do the Morris dancing, and we had a full-fledged band play for our Morris dance. And they were also a contra dance band. But back in those days, the band would be paid $100 to share among themselves.
Oh, dear.
And the caller would get $100.
Yes.
So this band, they came up to me and they said, you look like you're a good teacher. Would you be our caller? We're starting a series. So right off the bat, my first dance that I called was at my own series. I mean, that's just, that doesn't happen anymore.
Right.
And they said, but you have to share the money with us. So that became my little trademark, was that, oh, she's the caller who shares the money. Now, of course, for the most part, that happens.
Right.
All the time.
Right. Well, let's go back to your modern Western days.
Those are younger. I started in 2000, but I first did it at Pinewoods Camp in, I think, the early 90s or late 80s, and Bob Dalsimer was on. It must have been the late 80s. Bob Dalsimer was on staff.
Yes.
And he got up and he said the first night, he said, okay, I'm going to do this week-long course in modern Western dancing. And he was great because he said, I know what you're thinking.
Yeah.
You know, all of us were in our 20s and we're thinking, oh, no, the poofy skirts, this is terrible. And he said, but I want you to try it. And but if you come the first day, you got to stay to the end, and you can't just join in the middle because it's cumulative.
Yes.
So we all went and we were all very jaded. Well, within 10 minutes, I thought, oh, my gosh, I really like this. And it didn't go quickly enough for me. I mean, he only had to teach us, I think, star through was the only thing we didn't know, and maybe square through at that point we didn't know.
Yes.
From that, he based it on all the other traditional figures that we knew with the stars and the chains and all of that.
Yes.
And but I loved it, and I kept that in the back of my mind, but I didn't think of trying it again until 2000, and that was because I did it because for calling reasons, not that I wanted to be a modern Western caller, but I thought I was really exploring squares, traditional squares, and I just wanted more information. And I thought, I'll become a better caller and a better dancer if I go learn this. And it turns out I had a lot of friends at MIT's Tech Square.
Oh, yes.
And so they started to encourage me, but I didn't learn from Tech. I actually learned, and I'm really glad I learned from Tom Rinker from what was then the Bay Path Barn, the Bay Path Promenaders.
Yes, right.
And I really enjoyed that because, of course, MIT's class is very accelerated. It's 14 weeks.
Yes, right.
Plus. And Tom did the standard mainstream plus program. And I enjoyed that from a teacher's perspective. I enjoyed watching him teach. And that was great. I loved it. And then I joined Tech Squares. And I know some of my other friends are chagrined now, but I'm actually a C2 dancer. I've gotten into challenge dancing, so so I absolutely love it.
Right. So, gosh, I never knew Tom Rinker. I knew Chet and Barbara Smith, the previous owners.
Oh, really?
Mm. Oh, I called there many, many times.
Oh, it's a great place. It's a
yes,
great
it is.
Place.
It really is. So, well, then... I'm surprised at what you're saying, because I thought you were probably in modern square dancing and then evolved into contras.
No.
It's actually the other way around.
And I'm trying to be evangelical about squares. it's interesting. It's probably indicative of what's happening in modern Western all over the country, but it's hard to convince my friends that taking the class is worth it.
Yes.
And even when I tell them, look, if you go to tech, it's only 14 weeks, and then you're golden, and then you're set, because a lot of these dancers like no walkthrough contras. They don't want to be bothered with teaching. And I said, if you put the 14 weeks in, every dance you go to after that, it's no walkthrough. You don't know what's going to happen. But it's still kind of a hard sell.
Yes.
Although I have gotten a lot of the Tech Squares dancers into contra dancing, which has been great. So, and contra dancing is thriving in New England right now. So we've got a lot of teenagers and 20-year-olds doing it.
Right. I'm trying to remember exactly where is Bolton. Is it just outside of Boston?
Yeah, it's about 35 miles west, due west.
Okay. I was thinking it was closer to Worcester, but...
It is, actually. It's sort of halfway between.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
That's the way I pictured it, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Which is why I picked Bay Path, because it was the closest square dance club near me.
Right.
When I went to learn.
Yeah. Okay, well, what's your family situation, Lisa?
I have a husband. His name is Michael.
Okay.
And we actually met dancing. We met at Pinewoods at English American Week. But he prefers English dancing to contra dancing.
I see.
And even though he's an engineer and would absolutely love modern Western, I don't think I could get him near it.
Right. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, tell us about some of the contra dances around New England now. Do you have a regular group that you call for?
I organize a regular dance, but I don't always call at it. We have about seven times a year, we have a advanced, challenging contra dance. And we purposely only do it about seven times a year, so it's a special treat and not the expected norm, because, of course, what we love about contra dancing is it's available to everybody.
Yes.
But I also am on the Thursday Night Dance Committee, contra dance committee, which is a committee of the New England Folk Festival, and we put on a weekly Thursday dance, so... I actually book the talent for that, and I call it that four or five times a year. And then there are Monday night dances at the Scout House that I call at frequently. And also out in Greenfield, Massachusetts. But also, I mean, I go all over the place. I just came back from a summer of a dance camp in California and 2 weeks at Pinewoods, and before that I was in England doing a dance weekend. And there are a lot of new contra dance weekends out there now, so... I'm getting asked to do a lot of those.
Yes. Well, you say there is quite a bit of contra dancing in England?
Yes, they're actually trying to change it a little bit. There's the more traditional style, which when you ask them to balance, they balance twice, which takes up 8 beats.
Yes.
And they do it the old step swing style, and they stay with the same partner, and about, I don't know, 10 years ago maybe, some organizers and dancers came over to a dance weekend in Atlanta and realized, oh my gosh, this American style of contra dancing, and they call it the Zesty Contra. And that's now the code word in England, that if you go to a Zesty Contra, it means the music's going to be fast, you're expected to change partners, and that you're going to be doing the contemporary style of balancing and more of the contemporary figures. There are two paths there. They're having a hard time getting some of the younger folks in because Kaylee dancing is so big. They're English-style Kaylee dancing.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, it's got a looser structure, and you can have alcohol there.
Oh, yes.
But there are plenty of wonderful festival weekends in England, and I've called at a few of them. And I tell you, the British are great. Well, it's like calling to a modern Western crowd. They listen. They actually stop and listen. The contra dance crowd, they're not always very good at listening.
Yes.
But that's part of the skill set that you have as a contra dance caller, is to get their attention.
So you didn't get to Europe?
I've been to Denmark. Denmark has a thriving contra dance scene. And, again, a number of them have been over mostly to Pinewoods, I think, so that their dancing has changed, and they're dancing more to live bands. They tend to have a system of – it's sort of halfway between a modern Western club and a contra dance, in that they have adult education classes, but that you would join somebody's club to go learn the contra dancing. And those are usually done to tapes.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that. But
but it also means they have a very sophisticated list of figures that they can do, and you can throw them all these old traditional squares, and they have no problem. They have learned cross trail through. They have learned square through. I mean, they could probably all do basic and a little bit of mainstream without even knowing that that's what they were doing, because
yes.
they've just been taught all of this in sort of a class-like structure.
Right.
Whereas for when I throw those things into traditional squares, I have to spend some time teaching what they are.
Do you get up into Canada?
Yeah, I've been. See, Toronto has a great contra dance scene. Ottawa has a small one, and Vancouver has a very nice has two very nice dance weekends. So I've been up there quite a bit.
Do they? Do you go for the French Canadian type of music?
They usually don't. In though they're more of the Anglo style of. They're New England style, but about 15 years ago or 10 years ago, French Canadian music became all the rage in New England, and then it has spread.
Is that right?
Well, when they first came down, I was working at a dance camp at Augusta in West Virginia, and we had a French Canadian band, and the problem is they can add and delete phrases at will. And so that was one of the things we first had to communicate with them was that, you know, this is strictly 32 bars.
Yes.
And now, of course, any band that comes down to play for us, they play 32 bars. But that's been a huge influence with the percussive feet and the very cheery nature of the music. And a lot of bands are now playing. There are certain big hits of French-Canadian tunes that a lot of bands across the country know.
Yes. Well, I always liked that French-Canadian music, but are you active at New England Folk Festival?
I sure am, and I've been doing that for many years. I first started off as the Morris Dance Coordinator, and then I think my second year there I was made president. So I've done that, and the last, I don't know, 15 years or so, I've been doing the programming for the American side, which is mostly contras and squares. I'm also on the grants committee. That's true.
Yes.
I love NEFA. It's a great product, and it's a really wonderful board. It's a large board, but because we have this product that we all believe in, namely the festival, it's great to work there.
Yes.
And, of course, they also sponsor the Ralph Page Weekend and the Thursday Night Dance and other things. So.
Right. Well, I don't know if you knew that I was on the board of directors of New England Folk Festival at one time.
I think it's great.
Way back in the 50s.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, because one of the ethics we have or what's on our agenda for dancing is that we know that this is one of the places that we can introduce newer dancers to some of the more traditional style of American dance.
Right.
So that you will have a tribute to Ted Snella and maybe an hour-long session on his triplets. Actually, I think Tony Parks recently did an hour of Ted Snella squares. And then we also offer the chestnuts, what we call the chestnuts, which are things like Money Musk and Chorus Jig.
Yes.
But also, we just think squares are important because squares are traditional squares. That's a hot topic right now. And unfortunately, a lot of the younger dancers who are coming in think they don't like them.
Huh.
And those who grew up dancing love them. But the newer dancers don't quite get it, and so there's still some friction there that they don't think that squares should count as the American dance program. And we're trying to educate them.
Yes.
But just as many people who say, oh, I'm not sure about squares, especially at NEFA, people love them, and we offer all types. We offer the traditional. We offer, well, we don't offer modern Western, but we offer the more contemporary traditional style.
Yes. Well, of course, the days that I was associated with them, I was working at the University of Massachusetts. And but I know Ted Snella and Connie and Marianne Taylor at the time were very active, and Ralph Page, of course, at that time was a big part of it too.
Right.
Did you know that he couldn't stand bagpipes? He would, you know, in those days, I don't know if you still do it, but they always had a grand march led by bagpipes.
Oh, my God.
Open the festival.
Oh, Oh my gosh! No, I didn't know that. Oh.
And he wouldn't even be—he wouldn't even stay in the hall. He'd wait till that part it was over before he'd even come in.
Well, then he'd have a hard time with some of the changes in New England contra dance music, because they've added a lot of winds, and some of those winds are saxophones, and there's an instrument called the bombard, which is basically a bagless French bagpipe.
Is that right?
A racket, and that's become very popular in a few bands. I mean, it takes talent and it takes a lot of wind to play it. So maybe there are only two that I know of, but the dancers love it because it makes them sit up and pay attention. But yeah, Ralph wouldn't have liked that.
No, that's for sure. Right. Well, of course, in those days too, they used to have the band who was anybody could sit in kind of a thing. You know,
we still have that. That's called the Festival Orchestra, and we offer it four times throughout the weekend.
Oh yes.
And I've been lucky because I've actually been able to conduct that in the last couple of years. I conduct one of the sessions, and it's just so fun.
Yeah.
And we've even started a youth festival orchestra, and you have to be under the age of 25 to play in it, although the conductors have always been over 40 because we can't find any young ones who have the skill quite yet to conduct all that. But
yes. How many pieces do you get when you how many instruments?
Oh, for the festival orchestra?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, the stage is packed. Now, the stage is pretty small at times, but you probably get well over 20.
Yeah, right.
And then you have people hanging on the sides and sitting next to it. And some of the popular sessions, you probably get over 30.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, dulcimers and everything, right?
Oh, yeah, everything. I know, it reminds me, whenever I hear the festival orchestra, it reminds me of those first recordings that Dudley put out of the Canterbury Country Dance Orchestra, and just that sound. And that was so popular when I first started dancing. Now, those records were just the most popular thing because, again, he was propagating all these new tunes that people hadn't heard, which were really old tunes, but they were new to us. So,
right.
Yeah, it's fun.
One of the things that's so much different about contra dancing is there's so many younger people. What's your feeling about that? Because it's contrasted to modern Western.
Oh, boy. Well, as I said, I think the difference is that our doors are always open and you can always join in.
Yes.
Many dances offer beginner sessions, but in 15 minutes you can teach them everything they need to know, and they don't even need to go to the beginner session. And I think that is the huge difference, and I think that has a lot to do with technology and people being used to, changing channels so quickly. They don't want to have to put in the time to go to a class and learn.
Right.
And also the mobility factor that we have, especially in New England. I mean, you have so many dances that you can choose from, and these teens and 20-year-olds, they do. They choose which dances they're going to, and so they don't have to think that they just have to go to one place to do this or to learn this.
Right. Well.
Although, you know, interestingly, though, we are seeing some generational issues here in Boston that we're gonna be working on it because, you know, we used to be the hot young 20-year-olds who were changing the dance scene, and I think a lot of people have forgotten that we used to do that. And when these other younger folks have come in, they have so much more energy than we do.
Yes.
And it's a matter of teaching people to adjust to each person you come along to in line. And also, I mean, we had a huge influx recently because all it takes is one teenager telling their class, hey, their high school class, come to this dance. And that's enough to tip the balance in the dance hall. But we're trying to let everybody know that, hey, this is for everybody, and adjust to the people you meet. And I'm sure also for these younger dancers, it's a shock to them that they're dancing with people their parents' age and calling them by their first name. And, you know, that's just part of our culture. And so there's culture clash for both sides, but it's a good sign. And we also have a lot of young musicians coming up, which is what we really want to make sure continues. So
yeah, that's great.
Young callers. Yeah.
Yes. Well, are there any groups around which are like the old, staid and proper dancing, or
there are a few in New Hampshire, where the program is still fairly set, and they're doing the old style of dances. They're dwindling, to be honest. Actually, Tony Parks is about to start a series here in Boston, a monthly series, which is great, and he's going to feature the New England quadrilles and other styles of dance, the way the dances used to be, the way Ted Sinella's dance was, I think, with a mixture of some international couple dances and things like that. And we'll see how well that goes. I doubt that will attract a lot of young people, but, you know, all it takes is one ringleader
yes.
to come and say, hey, this is fun. Let's bring our friends. So.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. So.
But as I said, that's why it's so important for NEFA to make sure that we offer the old style of dancing or the more traditional so people understand it.
Right.
And the other good thing that NEFA has been doing, I mentioned the Ralph Page Legacy Weekend. They were losing people for a while. That's a weekend that celebrates the style of dancing in the day of Ralph Page. And then somebody had the brilliant idea of, why don't we make this a popular place for younger callers who need to learn about history? And that has really started a nice revival so that callers all over the country know that, oh, I've got to go to the Ralph Page Weekend. And there are lots of events for these callers. And, of course, then they bring their friends. So we've had an influx of energy there, which is great.
Right. Well, I'm interested in this place you went in California, you say, this summer.
Yeah, that was, it's called Mendocino, and it was an American week, as they called it, and I actually did a contra dance callers class there as well as did some calling.
Yes. How about the dance up in Greenfield? I hear a lot about that. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Oh, Greenfield is the hotbed. It's in this small grange, and I think the first dancing was started by David Kaner, musician David Kaner, who's also a very fine caller. And then it has just boomed so that there is now dancing there every Friday and Saturday night and sometimes on Sundays. And every dance has a different flavor. And David was very smart because he got dancers onto to join the Grange, so that they're now helping to run the Grange, which I think is really, really wonderful.
Uh-huh.
It's just become a mecca. And I think that happened probably about 10 or 15 years ago because real estate is just too expensive near Boston. So people moved to Western Massachusetts.
Yes.
To live. And then a lot of musicians live in Brattleboro, and now there's a dance in Brattleboro. So that is just a great place to be dancing.
All right. You probably bump into Ralph Sweet there.
Oh, Ralph. I love Ralph. Yes. Yes, I've had lots of interesting, cantankerous conversations with him about squares.
Yes.
But he's been another great font of information for me.
Well,
so, Ralph is great. Yeah. Yeah, he dances at all those dances. I just saw him recently. I just saw him last Friday kicking up his heels at the contra dance.
Right.
So,
of course, he grew up with modern Western, too.
And that's what I meant about the cantankerous comments.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. and he still runs his own bond dance, which is great.
I know it, yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's a great place, actually. It's a beautiful barn.
Oh, it's a gorgeous barn, and he still makes flutes.
Yeah.
He and his son make flutes. Oh, yeah. No, he's a wonderful treasure. Oh, and of course, I think, was it 2 years ago, he came out with his Singing Square CD?
Yes.
Oh, it's wonderful, because I grew up dancing to all those squares. And so it's really great that they've been preserved, and some of the younger callers are taking those on, which is really nice.
Right. Well, let's see. What am I missing? Anything? You think of anything you want to tell us about?
Yeah. Well, I will say that it's interesting that when I started modern Western dancing, a lot of my friends said, uh-oh, and how are you going to become a modern Western caller? And, of course, they had no clue what it takes to be a modern Western caller. I said, I don't quite have that mind.
Yeah.
And plus, I mean, that would you really have to do a lot more schooling for that. And I have to be honest, I'm not interested in doing that. Although I have thoroughly enjoyed going up and being what I call the human chess piece.
Uh-huh.
at some of the caller schools. So I think the first one I went to, I just went to for a day, and I think Jim Mayo was running that, and that was great. And I love Jim because he has that wonderful singing patter style that is so close to what I associate with good rhythmic square dancing, the more traditional style.
Right.
And then recently I went to one that Mike Jacobs was doing out in Western Mass, and it's just fun. It's just fun to see what you have to think of and what they talk about with stage performance, and so I've really, really enjoyed that. That's just been fun. And then getting to meet people like Joe Casey and Culver Griffin and talking to them about, all right, tell me about the old stuff. I want all those old squares that you used to call.
Right.
Because those are popular with our dancers.
Yes.
You have to teach them well, but those are really popular, and I love calling them. I just think they're so much fun. So.
Well, you give me a fresh new perspective, and you're thinking that in order to be a good contra caller, you got to do some Western modern Western.
Well, I'm not. Well, let's see. Now, there's an interesting question. It was for me as a square dance caller that I thought that I needed to do this. That one's not doing so well.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So, but who knows? It may change. It may still come into the dancing. But I just think it's important that if you want to call squares and call them well in the traditional style, you've got to look at the whole spectrum of square dancing.
Yes.
And modern Western is certainly a part of that.
Well, I'm sorry to say my tape ran out a minute ago, but I've turned it over, and we're recording again. One of the questions I've been asking all the other people that I talk to, or primarily the modern Western type of people, is where do you think square dancing is going in general? And maybe we can slant it toward contra dancing.
Well, no, I mean, to me, keeping the modern Western alive is important. Tech Squares is not having a problem, but of course they lie outside of the mainstream of modern Western.
Yes.
But they are thriving, and partly because they offer it as part of PE credit, which I think is really smart. It's a club, you know, embedded in the school.
Right.
In fact, that model has been so popular that somebody else is now doing contra dancing for PE credit at MIT, which I think is also really smart.
Right.
So I don't know. There has to be something to get people interested in it again. And I have a theory that I think somebody should look into, which is, I think if they made a teenage movie around the teenage competition squares,
yes,
I bet that would revive it. But they need to make a Hollywood movie with a romance story, and you know, get some hot looking caller up there.
That's a great thought.
Yeah, and get some 20-year-olds, or do it in college level or whatever. But we've danced to some of those teen competition tapes. You know, they're not easy.
Yeah, right.
they're not easy. But I could just imagine either that, or to make a film, a Hollywood film, around the Colorado Rocky Mountain dancers.
Yes.
Because what they do is spectacular. And again, that's not easy choreography. That's learning a lot of interesting figures. And
right.
So I think that would be a great way to spread the word out about modern Western and get people interested. Now, you know, the powers that be, I think Caller Lab would then have to be open to the fact that if you've got this influx of teenagers, as we've had in contra dancing, that's going to change things a little bit.
Yes.
And that you have to ride that wave with them.
Right.
So, but otherwise, I just don't know. I just don't know. I mean, for my friends, I know there are a lot of things they don't like about modern Western besides the classes. They don't want to have to wear the outfits and
yes,
and all of that kind of thing.
Well, I think I've been an advocate for competitions all along. I used to call for a competition out in New York State, and it culminated at the New York State Fair every year.
Oh, wow, how exciting.
And it was really, I thought it was a tremendous boost for the you know, for the young people in New York State.
Mm-hmm.
So it was conducted through the 4-H clubs and the Future Farmers of America.
Yeah.
And the Granges and, you know, so it was strictly in the agricultural end of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
But I still thought, in all these small communities, these kids were really competitive, you know. And they,
oh, yeah.
Boy, if somebody made a mistake, the other 7 people were down on him.
Oh, that's right.
And,
but, you know, I'm thinking of this because, you know, a few years ago there was a Hollywood movie with people young people learning swing dancing, and swing dancing became popular.
Yes.
And then there was one about salsa dancing, and salsa dancing became popular, and I thought, wow, there's a great storyline in following a teen club. And again, it's especially if you throw in the Hollywood romance part. Because dancing in general is very popular right now.
Right.
So they just have, but again, teen competition dancing looks very different from going to a basic mainstream plus class. And that's the difference that I think people would have to be willing to accept is if they come in expecting something hot and furious and fast, then, you know, you have to be able to deliver it to them.
Yes.
And as much as contra dancing is growing with all these young teenagers coming, we're still getting people in their 40s and 50s, too.
Right.
And again, because you don't have to take a class, you just show up whenever you finally get the gumption that, okay, I'm going to do it tonight.
Yes.
So, I mean, our dances have been very well attended, especially over the summer. So,
well, you probably have a few dancers that are even older than that, probably.
Well, how old Ralph Sweet? As I said, he's still kicking up his heels.
Yeah, right. I think he and I are about the same age.
He's there all the time. He loves it, and they love him. That's what's so great. They know him very well.
Yes.
And plus, you know, he calls contras now.
Sure.
Oh, no, he's a very respected member of the community.
Yeah.
So.
I guess he dances with his daughter mostly.
Right, right. But he has friends who give him a ride up from Connecticut to Greenfield, so.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Right.
But, I mean, I'll be honest that if I had not had Tech Squares, I probably would not have continued with the Modern Western. Now, it turns out that the club I learned from dissolved fairly rapidly after I took my class, just for whatever reason. But maybe because I am a contra dancer and I like things to be a little bit faster. Challenge level is not faster, but it's faster for the mind.
Yeah.
There's a lot of looking at the tiles and trying to recall what figure was just called. But
right.
And also at Tech Squares, they tend to dance a little bit faster. And,
yes.
So I know for my friends, that's what makes it interesting to them.
Right. You know, this morning I just had an hour and a half conversation with a young caller out in California,
mm-hmm.
who is, I think, the first call he called was like at C1 or something like that.
Oh, my, yeah, that's what happens.
And
they get interested in that.
But we got talking about timing and phrasing and what is appealing about square dancing and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have any comments along that line? I know that what I mean is modern Western dancers primarily are not dancers. In other words, they don't dance to the music particularly, primarily because the callers aren't giving them a chance to. All they're doing is solving problems, solving riddles, I mean. Do you have any thoughts on that line?
Well, again, that's where I'm very lucky because Tech's caller, Ted Lazat, is so musical. So that whenever he hits that out, for the 90% of the time, whenever he hits that Allemande left, it is somewhere in the music where it just makes sense.
Is that right?
And so you, not only do you get this little zing of pleasure from, oh, look, here's my corner, but you get it because it fits in with the music.
Yes.
And also, Tech Squares, like a lot of gay clubs, has, you know, a lot of these very funny flourishes. But they have to be done in time. There's one before Weave the Ring, which is this whole clapping sequence. And you'll hear people saying 5, 6, 7, 8 to cue themselves into the clapping sequence.
Yes.
So it's a very musical club in that regard. I know for traditional squares, that's totally key for any of the traditional quadrilles or breakdowns that people do. But that's why I found it a little bit harder when I started to learn old-time Southern style and some of the Western. But even when I'm doing the traditional Western, it's just like hearing Jim Mayo call. It's still, there still is a phrase there that you want to be with. And of course, I can take liberties with what I call because I can call an eight-count swing, and I know that they'll actually take the eight counts instead of just going two times around. And I also know that they will take eight counts for a lady's chain, which, you know, in modern Western, it's more like six counts.
That's true, right?
But see, to me, that's important personally. And I love it when modern Western callers like Jim can do that and make people dance. I've had great conversations with him about that. He said, you can encourage them to dance that way. You can encourage modern Western dancers to dance that way.
Right.
And actually, I've even done some challenge level dancing. Vic Cedar's great at that. He's right on the music. He's got a great voice. And Ben Rubright's great at that, too, so that, boy, you're just sailing along and doing it right to the music, and it's wonderful. I think dancers notice that when it's like that. I think they notice that, oh, we're just sailing along here.
Yes, right. Well, it's interesting that when I was traveling quite a bit back years ago, I had one tip that I called my challenge tip, and it was an old New England quadrille. Rods right and left, it's called.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I know exactly which one that is.
I recorded that, you know.
I did not know that.
It's on Folkcraft, yeah.
Oh, my
And
God.
It was written by Rod Linnell.
Rod Linnell and all his wonderful, oh, man, his quadrille. Oh, aren't they great?
Oh, I tell you.
I do those as challenge level dances too.
Yeah.
Just because it takes more people.
But I was at Maine Folk Dance Camp Recreation Leaders Laboratory that Lawrence Loy used to run up in Maine. And Rod Donnell showed up one time and I fell in love with him. And he had written this quadrille and, but he never put a name to it. So I said, when I recorded it, I said, well, I'll name it Rod's Right and Left, because that's what it was.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And I tell you, the higher the level of the club that you call this to, the worse it is. I mean.
I can understand that with challenge level dancers. The first time I saw challenge level dancers, I was actually at a plus dance, and it was at Tom's barn, at the Bay Path barn. And so he had the main hall out front, which is where we were, but he also had the back room. And Tom himself was calling, I don't know what level it was, C2 or something in the back, and a guest caller was calling in the main. And I went out to look at this challenge level dancing that all my MIT friends were doing. And what I saw was Tom giving the name of the call, everybody suddenly looking at their feet, shuffling around, ending in waves, and then looking up. It looks very Pavlovian. And I thought, that does not look like dancing.
Right.
And, of course, now I am one. But we're lucky because we have tapes from people who actually help you sail along, as I said.
Yes.
You know, speaking of an interesting challenge, recently I think we got these tapes from Jim Mayo. I was at Clark Baker's house, and we'd gotten these tapes of callers, I think it was the early 60s, and it was fun because there were two squares of us, I think, and most of us were contra dancers as well, but we were also challenge level dancers or plus level dancers. And to me, it was just a fascinating marriage of modern Western and traditional, because those people in who were dancing who hadn't done any contra dancing, they couldn't do some of the figures.
Yes.
And then vice versa. But I loved it. And some of them were pretty darn hard. And these were taped at a regular convention.
Right.
Partly that's because some of these figures aren't done anymore, like the cross trail. But I fell in love with Gloria Rios Ross. Oh, my gosh, what a voice. And there she was, a woman doing this.
Yes.
And then there's Al Brundage doing things. And I can't remember who the other one was. Earl Johnson. Oh, my gosh. I just thought, I want to do more of that.
Right.
But unfortunately, not all of that could be translated to the style that I call, because the figures are a little bit more difficult.
Yeah,
but
yes.
Boy, was that fun.
Right.
And it was all very rhythmic.
Right. Well, you know, I mentioned a word a little while ago. What do you find appealing about calling?
Oh, what I love about it is being a natural born teacher. I love, for contra dancing, the language of it, and it's the language of teaching, because that's what really sets it up. Because since people may not know these figures when they walk into the hall, you have to be able to describe them in a very succinct, clear fashion. And I love getting new dances and then figuring out how do you teach them and what's the most efficient language and understanding how bodies work and what people hear when you say things, which is sometimes a surprise when you say things and they don't do exactly what you meant. And then I love to be a guide for somebody else's good time. I mean, and of course, they're all the performance things. I think I've always been a performer, and I enjoy that, and I enjoy working with a live band. But I'm very aware that my golden moments are those 2 minutes of the walkthrough, because once I start cueing and prompting the dance, I don't want my personality to come through, because that's when the band is supposed to shine. But I just love being a guide in other people's good time and coming up with a program that's interesting for them, and it has to be interesting for me, too.
Right. Well, that's very interesting. You're talking about the language of teaching. I don't know if you ever knew Don Armstrong.
Oh, yeah.
Did you? Well,
yeah.
You know, I used to go to Contra Dance Weekend at York, Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah.
When that was still going on, and he had the masterful ability to say exactly the right thing,
mm-hmm.
to get everybody to do what he wanted them to do. He was a past master at that. But
yeah, and I think that's a real skill, and that's when I'm asked to do callers courses, that's basically all I do, is that I have them, we talk about what language is effective, and we mostly do walkthroughs.
Yes.
Which is the teaching part of contra dancing. And they get a little frustrated because they want more mic time with the band, and I'm saying, hey, look, anybody who can count to eight can prompt a contra dance.
Yes.
It's the teaching, and then there are the other things like the programming and certain leadership skills just because you're in the community. But it's the teaching that really separates the callers apart.
Sure, right. And, of course, he wasn't ashamed. When he called, he had a music stand in front of him, and he had his notes right there, great big notebook. And he had it on that music stand.
Oh, good for him. Well, now they all have laptops.
Yes.
Have you seen the challenge level callers? It's all on their laptops.
Yep.
Along with the music.
There's one funny story along that line. It happened at the New England Folk Festival. We initiated a Sunday afternoon workshop. Each year we'd pick a different folk dance, and
mm-hmm.
English one year, Irish year one.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one year, the English teacher was, I can't remember who it was, and I wouldn't probably mention her name anyway, because she got people out on the floor who had not done English dance before, and she got them into, she said something like, well, make a triple. And nobody knew how to make a triple.
Mm.
And when they finally got that arranged, in fact, I think it was Ted Sinella that was pushing people around to get them arranged. She said, okay, well, this dance art, you do an up a double. And everybody looked at each other because nobody knew how to, and she could not say all you do is balance forward and back twice.
Yeah.
And it was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
She says, you know, do a set and turn single, and everybody looked at each other, and she said, you know, you're doing set and turn single. That's all she knew. But anyway. Well,
for contra dance callers, it's particularly important because we welcome beginners at every dance, so you
sure.
you have to know how to break down these moves. And it's fun for me. That's one of the first things I do with new callers. Is I'll have them go through a ladies' chain, and I'll have them say, what's actually happening here? And there's things happening that they hadn't even thought about.
Sure, right.
So.
Yeah. Well, look, Lisa, I think I kind of run out of steam.
Okay.
This has certainly been an interesting conversation, and I'm really, really happy to have a chance to talk with you.
Well, I'm very flattered. Thank you so much.
And
are you still working at the archives?
Well, the archives moved.
Oh, they did? Where are they now? Are they in
Denver? They're at the University of Denver.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Oh,
it's really bad. Well, they boxed everything up, and they sent it up there, and everything is still sitting in the boxes. They've been there for 3 or 4 years.
Oh.
And that's why I changed my affiliation, my efforts, if you will, little project to the foundation in New England.
Yeah.
And Anna Dixon and so forth.
Oh, Anna's great. Yeah, I've been up to that library plenty of times.
Yes, I understand you're a life member now.
I'm a life member. That's true.
That's great.
He's very persuasive, that Anna Dixon.
Right. But
she saw me looking at those steps in order, and she said, well.
Yeah.
So.
What's your impression of the library and museum in New England?
Well, I mean, I love the fact that they had all the outfits up there. It was really fun. And as I said, I just was drooling over all those sets in order. I just think we're really lucky to have it.
Yes.
That and also the library, the Ralph Page Library that the University of New Hampshire has.
Yes.
Which isn't that far away. Together, that's great, and I'm always sending new callers up there and saying, you've got it. You may think that this is just boring historical stuff, but you're going to discover things that you're going to use, and
right.
It's great.
Well, I've never been to the University of New Hampshire's library. I hope I can go someday, but
yeah.
It'd be interesting to know, I just finished an interview with Anna Dixon.
Oh, you did? Oh, good.
And she mentioned quite a bit about University of New Hampshire,
mm-hmm.
and you might pipe into that. So I don't think it's online quite yet, but
no, it's not.
Yeah,
yeah, and that was one of the efforts of Marion Taylor, who just passed away, unfortunately.
Yes, I knew that.
For her, she was on the original committee that got the Ralph Page Legacy Weekend going.
Yeah,
and boy, we're all just very grateful for that now, because it's a really great weekend, and I don't think people quite appreciated it a while ago, but now they understand this is important stuff because we're changing so fast.
Yes.
So.
Well, do you subscribe to the traditional discussion group on?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I don't ever see your name in there.
I'm pretty busy.
You're what you call a lurker.
Yes, I'm a lurker. Occasionally, I'll correct things or I'll pipe in, but not too often. Although I certainly enjoy reading it.
Yes, right.
So, as long as they don't get into that, every 5 years they get into the discussion of the difference between modern urban contra dancing and modern Western, and we go through this cycle again.
Yes, I know.
Like, why don't you just try it?
Right.
Oh dear.
Well, why don't we call this a day then?
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
And I really hope I have the chance to meet you one of these days.
I agree.
If you ever get back out to the West again.
I was just out in Albuquerque in May.
Were you really?
Yeah, Doc Litchman and I were down in at the May Folk Madness dance weekend.
Oh dear.
And also, and I was also spending time with Chris Jensen, who I know out there.
Yes.
And actually, Chris just came to my caller's course for contra dance callers in Massachusetts. So.
Oh, good for her, yeah.
Oh, yeah, she's great.
She really gets around.
Oh, yeah, and she drove me right to the square dance building, and I was so jealous.
Yes. Well, I wish I'd known you were here. I did meet David Millstone. He was at the same weekend, wasn't he?
I think we were a year apart, yeah.
Oh, I see, okay.
Yeah, it was probably last year.
Oh, that's it,
yeah.
Okay.
But the same weekend, yeah.
Yes. Well, all right, so let's call this a day.
Okay, thank you so much.
And thank you very, very much.
All right.
Stay on the line, and I'll talk to you a little more.
Okay.
Hold on. Bye-bye.
Bye.